the Michael Coolidge Show. Coolidge.com. It's spelled with a K.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome to the Michael Coolidge Show. Coolidge.com is the website. Coolidge.com, that's spelled with a K. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Our email address is radio@coolidge.com. radio@KOOLIDGE.com. Broadcasting from the mobile Rise Broadband Studios here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The morning, the day after the Republican debate. And joining us here in person is Gail Trotter. Gail, welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be with you. Good morning.
I got about 15,000 emails from listeners on Friday saying, where was Gail Trotter? They're so disappointed that you weren't able to join us on Friday.
And I'm so sorry to miss.
But then here you are just two shows later.
I'm here. Yeah. It was planned. It was all planned.
Exactly. Wow. Do we have a lot of stuff to talk about? Of course, the debate, which you all watched, we have audio clips from, and we will discuss them. The undercard debate, I got to be honest, this is the first undercard debate I actually watched the whole thing. Because we're here in person, and as we do the show, we're in the same media filing room that was filled to capacity last night with media people. It's kind of like if you ever watch ESPN, 12 hours after a football game is over and the announcers are still in the empty football stadium talking. That's kind of like what it is right here now. We're in the empty place where everything was last night, but it made the most sense logistically for us to do it here. But anyway, so this room is a huge amount of tables, and it is literally on the floor of an arena, a hockey arena, and they have the big Jumbotron, which they lowered from the ceiling, and it's the biggest TV I've ever been this close to. And the undercard debate's on there, and you couldn't not watch it, you know? And I don't know if it was because of the first one I saw, but it was pretty good. The first debate was pretty substantial, wasn't it?
It was. I think the moderators did a great job, and the candidates were really able to get into their programs and their policies, and it gave us a taste of the primetime debate that was coming, and I thought it really set the stage for what the moderators were going to do and what we could expect to hear.
Yeah, and of course, after the last debate and that fiasco with CNBC, they wanted to set a tone of we're not going to interrupt or make it too much about us, the moderators. And they did introduce this new sound, this new ding or whatever.
Like a game show.
Like a game show, yeah. And I saw a couple of people comment about that. I don't know. They always try to reinvent the wheel with these debates. I still think the best way is without that sound, because it was ignored so much,
right?
Particularly in the second debate. It's like, what is it for? So someone suggested that they use a buzzer, which is a lot more rude, but it does stop people from talking.
Yes, you know? It does, and it wasn't very effective. So I think it didn't accomplish its purpose, but it was something different. They're trying to do something different because they couldn't get them to shut up the last time.
Right. But the first debate, Chris Christie and Mike Huckabee, of course, is the first time they were not on the main stage. I think that at least Chris Christie should have been on the main stage, and John Kasich should not have been on the main stage. Those two should have switched.
Swapped.
And I did read also that if you went by the polling of the last debate, there would have been they would have been on the stage there. So I mean, not the polling of the last debate. I mean, if they used the same polls that they used and even made them more recent. It wasn't like Christie's numbers were tanking. It was just they have a different methodology. Anyway, long story short, if you didn't see that debate, we don't have audio clips from it, but Bobby Jindal was in attack mode.
Oh, he was cranky.
Yeah.
He was cranky.
He was so mad. And it was funny. He wasn't attacking Hillary Clinton. He wasn't attacking Ben Carson, Donald Trump, or Marco Rubio. He was attacking these guys on the main stage with him, Chris Christie and Mike Huckabee.
Which allowed Chris Christie to look great, because Jindal went very personal, I would say. And Chris Christie didn't react. He didn't lose his temper. And I think he showed why he should have been on the main stage,
right,
and how he reacted. And he went after Hillary Clinton. My favorite line of the undercard debate was Chris Christie saying, Hillary Clinton is coming for your wallet.
Yes, yes. Hillary, and he said it in the only way Chris Christie can. And I don't know. I know you guys know there's a place in my heart for Chris Christie. I don't think he's going to be the nominee, but I think he has a better shot than anyone else on that undercard debate stage.
Oh, clearly,
that's for sure. And you never know how these things plan out. As was pointed out numerous times at this point, in other campaigns, Howard Dean was the leader of the Democrats. Rudy Giuliani was the leader of the Republicans. So the polling right now is not as important as the polling in January. Okay. Anything else about the undercard debate before we get to the meat and potatoes of last night?
Well, it's interesting because I spoke with Rick Santorum briefly after the debate, and he was asked about, you know, whether he thought that he should have been on the main stage. And his point was that they're trying to divide the field and that it really is a political act to make it into two debates because it's saying that those guys are not sufficiently, you know, serious to be on the main stage. And I thought that was a really interesting point, that even in the manipulation of these decisions, there are political decisions that are being made by a lot of these media companies in coordination with the RNC, which
right.
is very interesting.
Yeah, that is very interesting. And it's and we should tell our listeners, too, what it was like. You know, we got this media filing center here, and then the debate was in another building, but it's kind of attached to this arena. The Milwaukee Theater is attached. And so you kind of had to walk through these corridors to get in between them. And after the undercard debate, Rick Santorum came here and was in the media filing center and was cool. You know, people kind of had a little scrum around him. I went to the spin room after the undercard debate. You got to see that a little bit,
yes.
too. And, you know, it was almost an overemphasis on the undercarders because there are only two of them that went out and they're all
right.
the media in the room. So I go to the spin room and there's like literally 200 people crammed around. Oh my gosh, who is it? Is it Donald Trump? Is it Carly Fiorina? No, it's Bobby Jindal. And I'm like, really?
Right.
And people, because they don't have anything to talk about yet. So they're like, all right, let's squirm around him,
yes,
you know?
Exactly. Ask all the questions.
Right. But I mean, if Bobby Jindal walked into a Dunkin' Donuts here, I don't think they would
no.
have a scrum of people around him like that, you know?
And when Santorum walked down here to the media filing center, nobody talked to him. He was doing a spot for MSNBC Chris Matthews show.
Yeah.
And
a couple of people did, but it wasn't like, oh my gosh,
right.
there's Rick Santorum. Yeah, yeah. So it is funny. It's all about setting and timing. But yes, he came down afterwards. I know John Kasich came down afterwards as well, but he was on the main stage. We'll get to that in a second. Coming up on this broadcast today, we have lots of audio from last night's debate. And some audio that I obtained directly with some of these candidates. And there's some big ones. I'll even tell you who they are. Carly Fiorina and Donald Trump. That's right. I got some one-on-one questions to them. So we'll be playing some of that audio coming up. This is the Michael Coolidge Show. Let's take a break and get into the main stage debate with some audio clips. We're on the ground in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the day after the Republican presidential debate. Gail Trotter is with us. Don't go anywhere. We're back on the Michael Coolidge Show, live, Rise Broadband Studios Mobile, on the ground in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, to be specific, and we have some audio from last night's debate. First up, I guess you could say probably the biggest story before this debate was the whole Ben Carson flap,
yes.
right? And whether or not he misrepresented what he said as a kid or what he said when he was in high school about the ROTC scholarship, blah, blah, blah. That seems like such old news now.
Yes.
But this is the first clip we have from Ben Carson. Let's just go ahead and play it and comment on the other side of it.
Well, first of all, thank you for not asking me what I said in the 10th grade. I appreciate that. But
I'll just forget that follow-up there.
the fact of the matter is, you know, what we should vet all candidates. I have no problem with being vetted. What I do have a problem with is being lied about and then putting that out there as truth. And I don't even mind that so much if they do it about with everybody, like people on the other side. But, you know, when I look at somebody like Hillary Clinton, who sits there and tells her daughter and a government official that, no, this was a terrorist attack, and then tells everybody else that it was a video, where I came from, they call that a lie. And uh, I think that's very different from, you know, somebody misinterpreting when I said that I was offered a scholarship to West Point. That's the words that they use. But I've had many people come and say the same thing to me. That's what people do in those situations. We have to start treating people the same and finding out what people really think and what they're made of. And people who know me know that I'm an honest person.
What do you think? What did you think of that response, Gail?
I thought it was spot on, the fact that people know him as an honest person. And certainly when you're Secretary of State as an adult and your responsibility is to keep all of your ambassadors safe, and you have the first ambassador since the 1970s murdered, and then you lie about it, you tell your story one way to your family, and then you go to the American people and the relatives of the deceased heroes and tell them something else. I would agree with Ben Carson. That is a lie, and I'm glad that the Republican candidates are not letting this go away.
It was brilliant of him to kind of pivot on that and move it to Hillary Clinton, right?
As they should be on a lot of these issues, and I think that that's where he comes across very strong, because certainly West Point would have been honored to have him go there. I mean, to be a, you know, West Point cadet. And I could certainly see back at that time, you know, things worked differently. There was a good old boy network, and for them to come to someone who ended up going to Yale,
right,
and say, you know, we want you to be a West Point cadet,
right,
then certainly he could have had that communicated.
Yeah, it's not far-fetched at all.
No.
The story, and it's been verified by a number of people of that time period that, yes, they gave out those sort of things. But I don't want to get it. To me, it's such an old story. It's a stupid story, and it's so it was a rare thing where you saw a candidate in years past who would just be destroyed over this sort
right.
of thing. And not only did he come back, but you know, respond to all these questions, but he made, in a lot of cases, some of these media people look like fools, like the Politico, for example, who originally broke this and then tried
right.
to recant the whole thing. Anyway, that was not that was a great way to start the whole debate last night. That was early on. The next clip we have is from Jeb Bush. Now, before we play it, I got to say beforehand, I said that Jeb Bush, what he needs to do is he needs to figure out if he is going to be a president or not. Is he going to be presidential or not? He can't be phony Jeb Bush. He can't be trying to attack these other candidates. And look, I don't think he stood out from the other candidates, but he didn't. I don't know. You listeners, listen to this and see if you think Jeb Bush performed okay.
We're not going to be the world's policeman, but we sure as heck better be the world's leader. There's a huge difference where without us leading, voids are filled. And the idea that, and it's a good idea for Putin to be in Syria, let ISIS take out Assad, and then Putin will take out ISIS. I mean, that's like a board game. That's like playing Monopoly or something. That's not how the real world works. We have to lead. We have to be involved. We should have a no-fly zone in Syria. They are barrel bombing the innocents in that country. If you're a Christian, increasingly in Lebanon or Iraq or Syria, you're going to be beheaded. And if you're a moderate Islamist, you're not going to be able to survive either. We have to play a role in this to be able to bring the rest of the world to this issue before it's too late.
Okay, first of all, I'm not sure there's such a thing as a moderate Islamist.
No.
There's definitely
no.
People who are moderate Muslims, of course.
Yes.
But Islamist, by definition, is somebody who's extreme terrorist. So, you know, little gaffe on his part there. But generally, what do you think? I mean, he was trying to, you know, give his international, you know, bona fides there.
Right, and that's something that governors have traditionally struggled with, because they don't have the foreign policy chops. And he has the added complication of being the brother and the son of two of our presidents who engaged in wars in that region,
yes.
especially in Iraq. So I think anytime he tries to engage this issue, it's a minefield for him. And I think that he needs to be stronger. I think that when he went on Megyn Kelly and did not defend essentially his brother's record because he was called out on it, I think it made him look weak in the eyes of many of the base conservative voters who want to understand that the horrible things that are happening in Iraq right now are because of President Obama's strategic allocation of our foreign policy to withdraw from Iraq when it was stable, when we had accomplished what we had gone in to accomplish, and now we see that the entire region is aflame. And that should be laid at President Obama's feet.
Yes, absolutely. And that was a great opportunity during the debate last night for Jeb Bush to sort of make that point, that the Obama administration is not doing well in this regard. Carly Fiorina made it later. Carly Fiorina was a rock star. I even tweeted about it at the time. It's like, you know, we're here in the Media Filing Center, and I wanted to stand up and applaud, which would have been kind of embarrassing, but I don't care.
It would be embarrassing.
Oh, speaking of which, as an aside, so we're when you mentioned Rick Santorum came in right after in the Media Filing Center. I mean, this big, huge, giant arena room with people from all over the media. And one of the things that Rick Santorum said was when they were asked, what Democrats do you respect? Or are there any Democrats that you would vote for, or something like that? And I forget who. I think Rand Paul shot it down, saying this is one of those ridiculous questions. You're
right.
Trying to, you know, make us turn us into a gaffe or whatever. And Mike Huckabee said something hokey and funny, like he always does. And I forget what Chris Christie said, but Rick Santorum said, I respect the Democrats because they fight and they believe in something.
Right.
And he got really fiery about it. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And I believe that coming from Rick Santorum, because he is a very hardcore conservative and doesn't apologize for what he believes. If John Kasich said, I respect the Democrats because they fight, that would be different. But so anyway, so Rick Santorum comes in the filing room after, and this woman comes up to him and shakes his hand. And, you know, this is all supposed to be like objective media in here. I mean, I'm sure there's people like us, right? And she's like, I just want to say I'm a Democrat and I really respect what you said there. And I said, there's probably a lot of Democrats in this room.
Yes.
Anyway,
no doubt.
As an aside, back to Jeb Bush. It was okay, that comment there about international affairs, but he could have done what, you know, even just that clip or even just that quote, Rick Santorum might not even agree with, you know, that you respect Democrats, but yeah, it's passionate, it's fiery. Carly Fiorina got really passionate and fiery without being over the top. Jeb Bush, he turned it up a notch. He had more energy, as Donald Trump says, but it wasn't enough for me to say, man, that was a moment.
No,
there wasn't
a
moment
strength,
last night.
And
for
it
Jeb
wasn't
Bush.
The strength of his brother W. It wasn't the strength of his father in those debates. And so I think that as long as he didn't harm himself, which was not the case last night, then he came out about equal to where he was before. He didn't do anything that made people just completely revolt to what he was saying, but he was able to kind of maintain the support that he has so far, and nothing catastrophic happened to him.
We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we have some clips from Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, we already played Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, and a story that we're going to tell about who we hung out with after the debate last night and had a beer with, and it was someone on the stage last night. That's right. This is the Michael Kugelich Show. We are on the ground in Milwaukee. The post-debate analysis with Gail Trotter. Stay with us. We're back on the Michael Kugelich Show, live, Rise Broadband Mobile Studios in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, talking about Tuesday night's debate. We were there in person. We were in the Media Filing Center. We went to the spin room and stuff afterwards. And we do have audio that we collected in the spin room. We have some stories to tell even after that. We talked with one of these candidates in person. Tease. But let's play some audio from the clip last night, or from the debate last night first. We mentioned we didn't have any audio from the undercard debate, but we do. Chris Christie. And I know the main stage debate took up a lot of oxygen, and it will continue to. But this one clip from Chris Christie I want you to hear. I don't think his campaign is by any means on the downward slope. I think he's sticking around. Listen to this.
I'll tell you the thing that disturbs me the most about what's going on with the Democratic Party in Washington, that they're not standing behind our police officers across this country, that they're allowing lawlessness, to reign in this country. I spent 7 years of my life in law enforcement, and here's what every law enforcement, all 700,000 of them, should know tonight. When President Christie's in the Oval Office, I'll have your back.
Yes, another moment where I wanted to stand up and cheer. And this is kind of in the wake of, we didn't talk about these protests, or a lot of protests outside, Black Lives Matter protesters outside. In a lot of cases, anti-police mentality that a lot of people have there. And he was very clear, again, I think this is what people like. No, oh, you want me to pick a side in that battle? I'm picking the police side.
I think it's more complicated than that. I have a new piece at The Hill on policing and viral videos.
Yes.
And I think there's some advantage to having these videos that citizens are empowered with their cell phones to be able to take photos of police brutality, police mistreatment. And I think that the data will show that we are seeing that the police are backing off. So you're going to trade a little bit of security for liberty, because there's only a tiny, tiny percentage of cops who are violating the law and abusing people. But those police officers need to be deterred. And the viral video gives citizens the power to make sure. I mean, in law enforcement, we believe deterrence stops criminal behavior. So how would that not also be true with police officers, knowing that if they mistreat someone, someone could be taking a video, it could go viral, it could not only affect their career, but it could put them in legal jeopardy. They could end up going to prison with the very people that they have put in prison.
Yes.
So if it deters bad police behavior of the very, very tiny sort that it is, then I think that's a good thing. And I think Chris Christie, even though that was a very strong statement that will win a lot of people's support, I think the issue is more complicated than his soundbite about
it. Yeah, we didn't tell you this. Gail was actually one of the protesters outside in the anti-police rally. No, I'm kidding. No, everything you said is valid. And I agree about having documentation of this stuff, so that when people say or claim, and it's only one side of it, that
right.
Somebody was roughing me up. You know, there was a story of this professor who was out for a walk, and she happened to be African-American, and she said that these two white cops pulled her over for walking, and she went on this whole big diatribe about, oh, now, it's walking while black is a crime here in the United States. Well, guess what? They had the dash cam video, and they played the audio of the cops, and they couldn't have been nicer to her.
Right.
She was walking on the wrong side of the street, and they didn't want her to get hit by a car from behind. So they were coming up and saying, please be careful.
Yes.
Yeah. But she looked at that as, oh, she was being harassed. And so exactly that kind of stuff, well, that kind of makes the pro-police point a little bit more. But
so it can help either way.
Either way, absolutely.
Facts.
But not to go off on a tangent, I think Chris Christie there, then maybe that's what's happening with these debates, is that people are realizing that they need to take stands on things. We saw it later with Ted Cruz and John Kasich and Donald Trump about illegal immigration.
Oh, yes.
People actually taking stands on things. Whether you agree with them or not, you want to know where they stand. The person who has, by a bunch of different polls, they said did well last night and won it last night. I don't know if I agree with this. And people know that I'm a pretty... I like Marco Rubio, and I wouldn't be shocked if he winds up getting the nomination here. I don't think he didn't do poorly last night, but he didn't shine like in other debates. Do you agree with that?
I agree
with
you.
Okay. Let's hear a clip from Marco.
And here's what I don't understand. If you invest that money in a piece of equipment, if you invest that money in a business, you get to write it off your taxes. But if you invest it in your children, in the future of America, in strengthening your family, we're not going to recognize that in our tax code. The family is the most important institution in
society.
Nevertheless,
it's not very.
And yes, I do want to rebuild the American military.
How is it conservative?
I know that Rand is a committed isolationist. I'm not. I believe the world is a stronger and a better place when the United States is the strongest military power in the world.
Marco, how is it conservative? How is it conservative to add $1 trillion expenditure for the federal government that you're not paying for? How is it conservative? How is it conservative to add $1 trillion in military expenditures? You cannot be a conservative if you're going to keep promoting new programs that you're not going to pay for.
I may respond more quickly. We can't even have an economy if we're not safe. There are radical jihadists in the Middle East beheading people and crucifying Christians. A radical Shia cleric in Iran trying to get a nuclear weapon. The Chinese taking over the South China Sea. Yes, I believe the world is a safer... No, I don't believe. I know that the world is a safer and better place when America is the strongest military power in the world.
All right. Well, you know what? Maybe I stand corrected. Maybe that was one of the parts that I wasn't paying attention to. It's hard again here in the Media Filing Center because you're reading tweets. You're having discussions while the debate's going on. It's not like watching it at home. So, yeah, I got to be honest. I might have missed that exchange and didn't appreciate it as much there. But actually, Marco Rubio did shine a little bit in his exchange with Rand Paul.
I think it was a great illustration of why when the debaters are allowed to go into their policy positions, yes, we get the real critical delineating facts between one position and the other. So we have Marco Rubio and others who think that America has a unique role in the world, and we keep America safer if we have a strong military and we forcefully promote our national interests abroad. In contrast with Rand Paul, who thinks that we need to back away. And he was very offended that Marco Rubio called him an isolationist.
Bait.
He took that bait. Yeah. He rose to it. And I think this was a great example of where, you know, the GOP is a big tent. We have people who have very different ideas about how to promote American national interests. And this was a great exchange from them that really highlighted their very different positions that they're offering to the American voters to say, which way do you want America to be going into the 21st century?
Yes, and you bring up an absolutely great point. Remember, what the point of these debates are is exactly to show the delineation between these candidates. And Fox Business and the Wall Street Journal did a really good job in this aspect. They said this ahead of time. This is going to be a real debate. And I did see a lot of tweets while it was going on. There were some things didn't start off on a great foot from a lot of these candidates. People said, wow, is this the undercard debate? People were saying, you know, but I think people got their sea legs as things moved on. But the moderators did do a good job not interrupting too much here. And this was a great exchange between Rubio and Rand Paul. This other exchange between Trump and Kasich. Kasich, what are we going to say about John Kasich? I told you, I threw in the towel on this guy over a month ago when he made that ridiculous comment that if you're not for expanding the government, then you need to read your Bible a little
so
bit
offensive.
More.
That's so offensive.
That is so offensive. I'm done with John Kasich. Totally done. He didn't win any more votes last night,
no.
I think, with this exchange. Donald Trump and John Kasich going back and forth. Here we go.
We are a country of laws. We need borders. We will have a wall. The wall will be built. The wall will be successful. And if you think walls don't work, all you have to do is ask Israel. The wall works, believe me. Properly done. Believe me.
Can you just send 5 million people back with no effect on the economy?
You're going to have to send people out. Look,
so
we're a country. We're a country of laws. We either have a country or we don't have a country. We are a country of laws. Going to have to go out, and they'll come back, but they're going to have to go out, and hopefully they get back. But we have no choice if we're going to run our country properly and if we're going to be a country.
But if people think that we are going to ship 11 million people who are law-abiding, who are in this country, and somehow pick them up at their house and ship them out of Mexico to Mexico, think about the families, think about the children. So, you know, the answer really is, if they've been law-abiding, they pay a penalty, they get to stay, we protect the wall, anybody else comes over, they go back. But for the 11 million people, come on, folks. We all know you can't pick them up and ship them back across the border. It's a silly argument. It's no
all
sense.
I can say is you're lucky in Ohio that you struck oil. That's for one thing. Let me just tell you that Dwight Eisenhower, good president, great president, people liked him. I like Ike, right? The expression, I like Ike, moved 1.5 million illegal immigrants out of this country, moved them just beyond the border, they came back. Moved them again beyond the border, they came back. Didn't like it. Moved them way south, they never came back. Dwight Eisenhower. You don't get nicer, you don't get friendlier. They moved 1.5 million people out. We have no choice. We have no choice.
Yeah, so definitely some delineation there between John Kasich and Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's great because this is another key issue that American voters have to decide.
Yeah.
What do they think? Do they follow John Kasich and do they buy into his idea that and Marco Rubio previously with a Gang of Eight, do they buy into this idea that we owe more to children of non-U.S. citizens than we owe to American children? And I think that's why when John Kasich said that, consider the children, think about the children, it rubbed people the wrong way, because he's only talking about children that are here illegally. He's not talking about the families that are going to struggle.
Well, just to be clear, the children aren't here illegally. Their parents are, right?
Some of them are here illegally. The ones who surged
absolutely.
Over.
The ones in the last two summers from all different countries. And no one seems to be addressing that or talking about that at all. But as far as what we're to do about that, but Donald Trump is saying, we need to... and that probably caught a lot of people by surprise, the Dwight Eisenhower thing.
Yes.
I got to be honest, I don't know about the thing. I need to bone up on that a little bit, Eisenhower did with the illegal immigration situation in the
50s. Well, and Trump has the fairness argument, too. I mean, I think that's been the left's strength on pushing this illegal immigration, some kind of, pulling people in and granting them some path to citizenship, is that they're saying it's unfair to separate people from their families. But Trump said, what about the list? What about the people who can't come walk across the border, but they've been on a list for a long time? How is it fair to them? They're playing by the rules, but geographically, they can't violate the rules. They have to go, in a different fashion. So I think that fairness argument is a really powerful argument.
Yeah. I watched this show, one of my guilty pleasures, 90 Day Fiancé. It's on TLC, and it's about these people who come over on K-1 visas and have to marry their spouse, but they can't work for 90 days. Like, I'm watching these people, and, it's not political at all, but I'm like, they're following all these rules. They're doing everything right. They don't want to violate them. And I'm like, so are they chumps for following the rules?
Right.
Like, for not working, for, like, they're filling out all the proper paperwork and everything? I don't know. All right, let's take a break. And in this last segment this hour, we are going to play a clip from the candidate that we had a beer with after the debate last night. That's right. This is the Michael Kugel Show on the ground in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, at the Republican presidential debate day after. We're with Gail Trotter. We're broadcasting from the Rise Broadband Mobile Studios, and we'll be right back.
Carpet Mill Outlet, when you want more.
Been dreaming about beautiful hardwood floors in my home, so I went to Carpet Mill Outlet. The staff is so knowledgeable and friendly, I immediately knew this was where I was going to get my new floors. I learned that exotic bamboo flooring is twice as hard as oak flooring. Bamboo is so durable and scratch resistant, it is ideal for an active household like mine. And get this, they all have a lifetime warranty. Right now, Carpet Mill Outlet has no money down and no interest for 3 years. That's right. No money down and no interest for 3 years. My dream came true. I absolutely love my new bamboo floors, and you will too.
Carpet Mill Outlet, when you want more.
Tired of the same old holiday shopping? Then check out Rockford's premier arts and crafts holiday spectacular. This Saturday, 9 to 5 and Sunday, 10 to 4 at the ISC Indoor Sports Center on Riverside Boulevard. Your one-stop shopping destination with unique handcrafted gifts for family, friends, and yourself. 25,000 square feet with over 125 crafters and artists showcasing their creations. Jewelry, floral, crochet, home, holiday and yard decor, bath and body products, pet supplies, woodcrafts, clothing and accessories, pottery, doll clothes, and so much more. All handcrafted, all indoors. There's free parking and a sit-down restaurant, plus register to win hourly prizes. Adults just $4 and kids under 12 free. The Rockford Arts and Crafts Holiday Spectacular, a show you won't want to miss. This Saturday and Sunday at the ISC Indoor Sports Center. For info and a money-saving coupon, visit RockfordCraftShow.com. That's RockfordCraftShow.com.
With Rise Broadband, you can treat your family to a fast internet connection with all the trimmings. Starting at just $39.95 a month, you can feast on piping hot downloads, delicious videos, and a generous portion of Skype. Sign up now and get 1 month of free Rise Broadband service or a $50 Cabela's gift card. Call 844-838-3030. 844-838-3030. Rise Broadband. Feel free.
There's a movement in healthcare today. It's a movement of people who are ready to stand up and take charge of their healthcare. It's people like you and me who are tired of paying too much for healthcare. It's people who are standing up for their values. Liberty HealthShare is leading the movement of people who are looking for an alternative to traditional health insurance. Choose your own doctor, your own hospital, and live out your values with Liberty HealthShare. Join the movement. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. For more information, visit joinlhs.com or call 800-722-8041. That's 800-722-8041.
The Michael Coolidge Show on WROK.
We're back on the Michael Coolidge Show live, Rise Broadband Mobile Studios, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the day after the Republican presidential debate, which you all watched last night, right? If you didn't, and even if you did, you'll appreciate this particular quote, I think, from Senator Ted Cruz. Here we go.
And I will say, for those of us who believe people ought to come to this country legally and we should enforce the law, we're tired of being told it's anti-immigrant. It's offensive. I am the son of an immigrant who came legally from Cuba to seek the American dream. And we can embrace legal immigrations while believing in the rule of law. And I would note, try going illegally to another country. Try going to China or Japan. Try going to Mexico. See what they do. Every sovereign nation secures its borders, and it is not compassionate to say we're not going to enforce the laws and we're going to drive down the wages for millions of hardworking men and women. That is abandoning the working man.
Gail, what do you think?
Powerful. And I think given his personal story, it makes it even more able to resonate with people because he has the situation of his personal family history being of immigration recently, so recently. And I think that when we look at, I would have named Saudi Arabia in there too. Have they taken any of the Syrian refugees? Are they willing to take any of the people who are displaced by civil war in the Middle East right now? No. And I think that kind of makes the point that Cruz is making, that other countries do not have this insane immigration system that we have right now. And more importantly, because Senator Cruz was the Solicitor General of Texas, he is a person who cares deeply about the law, particularly about our Constitution. He understands that regardless of the issue, it doesn't even have to be immigration, but if we don't follow our laws, then we are weakening the fabric of our entire society. So even apart from the larger immigration issue, we can decide how to deal with the immigration problem. But if we don't follow our laws, then it causes problems for the entire fabric of our society.
I think what we're seeing here, trying to take a bigger picture here, is where this nomination process might be leading to. And again, if I were a betting man, which I am, and said, who are going to be the two men or women remaining on stage there in, March, April of next year, when really got to start deciding these later primary states who it's going to be? I would be surprised, but it's not impossible that Ben Carson and Donald Trump are still around, and Carla Fiorina maybe even too. But if I had to bet money, I would say it would be Cruz and Rubio. And they do have a slightly nuanced, but it is a difference on illegal immigration.
They do. They do have a nuanced view on it. And I think that they were able to go into that a little bit.
So this issue might be, for all voters, the critical difference there.
Yes, and it's something that people, I think, have strong opinions about, and they're being educated about it. And that's the one thing that Donald Trump was able to bring to this debate. Nobody wanted to talk about immigration. They didn't want to talk about it because it's a neuralgic issue. It generates a lot of emotions in people one way or the other. And I think Donald Trump jumping into this whole presidential nomination contest allowed this issue to be broken open, and each candidate nominee had to take a position on it and articulate what was the intellectual framework for it.
And that is when our broadcast cut off for about 50 seconds. So we had some dead air for less than a minute there. And we don't know why that happened. It just cut off from our mobile Comrex access. Anyway,
But one little funny thing, we forgot this splitter for headphones, and I don't know if you could hear it, but we had to, because we were playing audio clips and both of us needed to hear what the audio clips were, only one of us had headphones on so we could actually hear the audio clips being played live through our headsets. So my fix to that was I turned the mic away from me and I listened into the headphones, and while the clip was being, or while the candidate was speaking, I was basically reverse dictating everything that they were saying. I forget what it's called in acting when you have an ear thing in your ear and the words are being told to you right away. You just have to repeat them. Anyway, that's what I was doing to Gail, and I was kind of falling into the impression of the candidate, and she was laughing. So if you heard us laughing in the background while the clips were playing, it was me saying the words of the candidate while Gail was listening, while I was listening to it, so that we could comment after. I hope you follow. Anyway, that was the hour we did immediately after the GOP debate in Wisconsin on November 10th. I should say the day after. It was the morning after. And I believe the story I was going to tell was that Gail and I walked across the street afterwards and went to the Hyatt Hotel bar. A bunch of other people were there. We just had one drink because Gail's friend said Ted Cruz is at a bar down the street. So we went there, and sure enough, there was Ted Cruz talking, and Louie Gohmert, Congressman Gohmert, eventually showed up, and we had a beer with him too, and it was great. And on the way there, we were saying about how I think that's the one sort of Achilles heel of Ted Cruz, that he isn't somebody who you maybe want to have a beer with. And I'll tell you firsthand, having had a beer with him the night after the debate in Milwaukee, literally, I think he was actually having a glass of wine. I was having a beer. We talked about football, not politics. And I'll tell you, he really is a likable guy in person. When he's loose, when he's not, you know, on being the candidate and explaining why he wants to be president, he's a very normal guy. He's not phony. I'm not saying that when he's a candidate, he's phony. He's still Ted Cruz. But it was just very cool to see him sort of relax and talk about something that wasn't politics. And so I can attest firsthand that Ted Cruz is a very charming and cool guy in person. You can disagree with him about some of his politics, but you can have a beer with Ted Cruz. We appreciate you listening. And for more audio, go to Coolidge.com. That's spelled with a K.